Hello, and welcome to an old-fashioned type episode of Now Playing. This is Arnie.
This is Marjorie.
And we're doing just kind of a short mini-review, because our Facebook fans and forum fans have demanded it, of Iron Man 2, starring Robert Downey Jr., directed by Jon Favreau. Now, Iron Man 2 is a packed movie. If I did a plot summary, it would run longer than the length of this podcast.
Here we can summarize it real quick, because this is part of my problem with the movie. It is a part 2 and a part 3, all wrapped in one, because you've got Iron Man coming off as high as the first movie, and then he has his downfall where he takes his fame to his head and he has a failure and he really takes it seriously and he kind of goes out of control and has a bit of a drunken party and some problems and has, you know, he's rock bottom, and then he emerges on the top and saves the world. Oh wait, there it is, 2 and 3, all wrapped into one.
By the way, spoiler alert, and we're gonna have some major spoilers later on, but I'll give you another warning before
Here's one: Tony Stark is Iron Man.
They knew that.
Oh yeah, they did.
But so much of this movie, so much happens in the first 40 minutes that I felt like I was getting whiplash.
Oh, you're funny.
Get it?
Don't encourage him, folks. I thought the way the movie started out with the cheerleaders and the Stark Expo and the dancing and the big grand entrance that we are off for a fun movie like Iron Man 1. And I'm not saying Iron Man 2 isn't fun. I'm just saying it's a little bit more of a serious movie, and it lacked the fun element that 1 had. And I was really looking forward to this movie because Whiplash, awesome. Mickey Rourke, I'm sorry, he's the scariest motherfucker on the planet Earth. And I love the fact that he has a little baby chihuahua that he adores. But I was really looking forward to some good Iron Man Whiplash action. We got it in the first 40 minutes. It was
everything
fantastic.
In the first 40 minutes, Tony Stark finds out he's dying, and his blood toxicity goes from like 28% to 60% in the first 40 minutes. He went a couple of years, and it only got to 28%. I guess, you know, it's a bell curve type thing. In the first 40 minutes, because he thinks he's dying, he gives the company to Pepper Potts. And you said the movie opened with the Stark Expo. That's what I keep remembering in my mind. But no, it starts with Whiplash's father dying over
right.
in Russia.
Yeah.
And this really kind of creepy, ominous Russian sequence with Mickey Rourke and a bird. And
he loves his bird. Do not touch his bird.
I had no intention of touching Mickey Rourke's bird.
No. Don't make fun of his chihuahua either, because he will kick your ass.
He will. And he looks tough as Whiplash.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the trailers, you've seen most of the best action scene of the movie, which is Whiplash at the Monaco racetrack.
Oh my God. That is a fantastic action scene. That had me going. I really thought that Whiplash was going to kick Tony Stark's ass, didn't you?
Yeah.
And he kind of did, but they captured him. I kind of thought he'd get away.
But for that first 30 to 40 minutes, so much happens, and it seems like a lot was cut, because after that point, the movie really slows down. Now, the first Iron Man movie had its pacing problems, because between the time that Stark exited the cave and Stark started fighting Ironmonger, you know, there was a lot of what I think George Lucas would refer to as jazz riffs going on there, but those were enjoyable jazz riffs with Iron Man. I liked seeing Robert Downey Jr. and his, oh yeah, I can fly moments. Here, it seemed like after that point, they just didn't quite know what to do, because you have this big fight with Iron Man and Whiplash at the beginning, and Whiplash is a tough mofo.
Oh my gosh. But he went down too easy. Did you notice that?
He went down too easy, and B, he spends most of the rest of the movie staring at a computer terminal and dealing with Sam Rockwell. He is not a nemesis. Iron Man thinks Whiplash is dead for most of the movie, so...
But really, he's just on Facebook.
What I wanted was kind of a Wrath of Khan kind of thing, where Whiplash was the Khan to Tony Stark's Kirk. That's kind of what I was looking for, where Whiplash was a true nemesis. Instead, you get Tony Stark. They kind of reference the famous 80s demon in a bottle storyline, because Tony Stark goes on an alcoholic bender thinking he's dying. But it doesn't play out very well, though it does lead to a cool fight between Tony Stark and his best friend, Rhodey.
That was one of the cool fights, but it was not near as good as Whiplash at the racetrack. I'm sorry.
What made the Iron Man Rhodey fight was the music, because it had some Queen, it had some Beastie Boys, it had some It Takes Two to Make a Thing Go Right.
Yes.
I mean, the music just really sold that scene.
Yeah, it was good. But yet, you know what song wasn't in there? Oh yeah, anything by AC/DC.
There were two AC/DC songs. I do have a thing to say about the marketing of this movie. They lied to me. I thought that they were going to Maximum Overdrive this movie with the AC/DC soundtrack that they've released. I thought every song in the movie was going to be AC/DC. I thought even the score might be some AC/DC guitar riffs, because that's what Stephen King did, and if Stephen King did it, it must be right. In fact, I almost put on Facebook that I predict Iron Man 2 will be the best movie with an all AC/DC soundtrack in the history of cinema. Turns out that's a big advertising lie. There's an AC/DC song at the beginning, AC/DC at the end, but in the middle you get some Queen, you get some Clash. None of these are on the soundtrack. I was snookered.
Yes, you are.
So let's look at the actors here. You got Robert Downey Jr. back. So many people became a fan of him from the first Iron Man. He was really great.
In Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That was way before Iron Man.
And Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Fantastic in that.
Okay, and Sherlock Holmes.
Not so good in Weird Science.
I loved him in Weird Science.
Kind of blah.
He played Max.
Yes. Now, Sam Rockwell.
Who?
Genius!
Let me tell you, a big Sam Rockwell fan.
Yes,
here.
Love him.
Galaxy Quest, Charlie's Angels.
Choke.
Yeah, I actually sat through Choke for him.
He was in The Green Mile.
But, did you know he was originally one of the front runners to play Tony Stark for Iron Man 1
really?
Before Robert Downey Jr.
I can't see that. I think that would have been a waste of his talent. He doesn't do tortured very well.
He does smarmy really well.
Oh, he's fabulously smarmy. He does everything but tortured well. He's not a good woe is me kind of guy like Tony Stark where he's just down in the dumps. Because in Choke, he didn't portray that well. He was really good in Choke. He was the best part of that whole movie, actually, but he didn't do that very well. But he does bravado very well.
He was a great kind of doppelganger for Tony because he was equally young. In the comics, he's a much older character.
They were very good competitors. That's what it was. You know,
except that it never really felt like they were competitors because Tony Stark always has the upper hand.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's not the Bill Gates, Steve Jobs thing from Pirates of Silicon Valley. Here it was more like Steve Jobs and Corky from Life Goes On. We have Don Cheadle replacing Terrence Howard as Rhodey. And I think there's a line in the movie that's speaking to the audience because when Cheadle just walks in, he turns to Tony Stark and just says, "It's me. I'm here. Let's get on with it."
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's saying, "Yes, I am now Rhodey." And I think it even starts because Stark is like, "Rhodey?" Even though he's surprised to see Rhodey in that place at that time.
Yeah.
It's also, "Are you Rhodey?"
Now, the most genius casting, I think, in this entire movie is Gary Shandling as Senator.
Not Mickey Rourke.
No. Because Gary Shandling, you don't expect to see Gary Shandling in a movie.
No, I don't expect to see Gary Shandling
in a movie
anywhere.
At all. No, but here he is playing a little asshole senator, for lack of a better word there. And he does get his comeuppance, but genius. I love Gary Shandling. Been a big fan since the Gary Shandling show. It's nice to see him do something and get a job. But Mickey Rourke, also fantastically evil, tough. It's a shame that he spent the last two-thirds of the movie playing on the keyboard, playing Farmville, because he was so wasted. He would have been so great in another fight. They could have had one more where he wasn't in the suit, because the man's a badass. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think all those tattoos might be real. I'm not sure, but it's very likely. Gold Tooth might be his too. Don't know.
Now, I didn't think the other new cast member, Scarlett Johansson, did very well.
But she was supposed to be stoic, and she was. She was a guardian. She was supposed to watch Stark, and she did a very good job at that. You know, there's no emotions. I think she's great. I think she's beautiful. I think she did a good job.
I'm surprised you liked her, and I didn't. I would have,
yeah.
When we go in, I would.
Okay, you know who I didn't like in the movie?
Nope.
Samuel Jackson. And I'll tell you why. His role in the movie was very similar to Frankie Valli's in Grease, where he had to talk to Frenchie about her career path and how beauty school may not be for her. Because he was just kind of there to fill in the gaps. And
here's the
thing. You know, it just wasn't.
He acts like he has the answer to Stark's problem. Like he knows. And he drops off one briefcase for Stark. And ooh, the answer just happens to be contained somewhere in this briefcase. But yet he doesn't actually help Stark.
No, he doesn't do anything. It's a completely gratuitous role. It's almost like someone's got dirt on Sam Jackson and they want him in the movie.
Also, Sam Jackson, I'm not bragging here, but this is honest. I've met him. I got a chance to interview him a few years ago. This is the first movie where Sam Jackson just played himself. Because this is how Sam Jackson talks. He's very wry. He's laid back. He's got all the confidence in the world, but he's wry and funny and confident. He's not the guy you see in Star Wars. He's not the guy you see in Pulp Fiction, and he's not the guy you saw in Die Hard. He's the guy you saw in Iron Man 2, though. Just sitting there, drinking a cup of coffee. I mean, I don't feel like this role was really a stretch. Maybe he thinks because in the Ultimate Marvel Universe, they base the character's look on him, that they just want him to be Sam Jackson, not Snakes on a Plane movie Sam Jackson, but actually, like, sitting down to talk to you Sam Jackson. I don't know, but it wasn't much of a performance, I couldn't say. But again, I think perhaps maybe some things were cut out from Sam Jackson's role. There are some huge things. First of all, there are two scenes in the trailer that I can come up with off the top of my head that weren't in the movie. The first is Pepper Potts kissing the Iron Man helmet and throwing it out. Not in the movie. The second is Tony Stark showing some hottie, I thought it was Scarlett Johansson, but I'm not sure, how to fire the Iron Man glove. Not in the movie.
It happens sometimes.
Well, yeah, it happened to Major League, but...
It happened to the Brady Bunch movie, too.
I think that...
Oh, so well, now Iron Man 2 is in the same league as Major League and the Brady Bunch movie. That's awesome. Way to go, Jon Favreau.
I think... What about the fact that Nick Fury shows up and tells Stark, you're sequestered at your own house, and Agent Coulson is there and says, if you try to leave, I will tase you. Next scene, Tony Stark is driving away.
Mm-hmm.
There's no scene of him escaping. I mean, and then later on, Coulson's like, I heard you got out. And well, why did you even bother locking him there if like you're going to then, the next time we see him, he's driving to Stark Industries. This makes no sense. There are a bunch of cut scenes. I don't know why they felt they had to limit this to a 119-minute running
Maybe
time.
Maybe the director's cut on the Blu-ray will be a lot better. I'm not saying I didn't like it.
I blame poor pacing, and I also blame the writer. The writer of this movie is not a writer at all. He's an actor. He has written one other feature. He co-wrote Tropic Thunder with Ben Stiller. And because of Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr. is like, hire this actor to write Iron Man 2. His name is Justin Theroux. You've seen him in very little, but perhaps 8 episodes of 6 Feet Under, or 27 episodes of The District, or as the evil DJ in Zoolander. He's got a huge acting resume, but the guy's not a writer, and he tried to pack too much in. I could draw some analogies between this and Spider-Man 3, because you've got a second hero. It's no secret, because it's in the trailer, that Rhodey suits up as War Machine to fight with Iron Man. Kind of the way, spoiler alert for Spider-Man 3, Goblin teamed up with Spider-Man. You've got the personal strife and the downfall, kind of the darkness and the abuse of power. Peter Parker has it in Spider-Man 3 because of the black suit. Tony Stark has it here because of alcohol. You know, it's just too much in a script, and I don't think the writer was talented enough to balance all the elements, which is why I think things were cut. Things were so cut that during the Stark Expo speech and during the big dialogue scene between Robert Downey Jr. and Whiplash, it felt like the conversations weren't making sense. Like, they cut out lines that I'm like, when did this conversation suddenly become about thieves and liars? I'm confused. What the?
They really could have developed Whiplash into more of a nemesis, I think, and made him more of a threat, because that character had so much potential, I think, to make this movie just incredible. And I don't think it was developed as well as it could have been.
Now, all right, if you don't want to know how the movie ends and how all the things are resolved, press stop here, because now we've got to get into the end.
And then I really want you to answer before you do that, why haven't you seen this movie yet? And why are you listening to this podcast before you see the movie?
Because they want to know if we recommend it. So the big thing is, Tony Stark has palladium in him, which is a metal, but it's slowly killing him, although it's slowly killing him really quickly in the movie. Nick Fury drops off a briefcase, pops it open, and Tony Stark realizes that there's a new element that his father discovered that will be a suitable replacement for this palladium.
And why are they just finding out?
The computer immediately says, there is no way to manufacture this element.
That was then, Jarvis.
Yes, Jarvis, very good. Then Tony Stark builds a home laser, and the next line Jarvis gets to say is, you have successfully manufactured this element, which I just said there is no way to manufacture. Again, gaping, unsatisfying plot hole. He gets to fire a laser. It looked kind of like out of Ghostbusters.
I was thinking Real Genius.
It did look like Real Genius, especially when he's pulling the new element out. It reminds me of the scene of Val Kilmer looking into the laser. But how much more satisfying if we would have increased Whiplash's plot line a little bit? Because in the movie, it says Whiplash's father helped develop the arc reactor with Tony's father, Howard Stark. What if Whiplash had developed the freaking element, and now Tony needed to get it from Whiplash? Instead of this deus ex machina of this blue laser, how about having something where the antagonist is actually a part of the solution, and that ties all the plots together in a single bow, like good scripts do, instead of just, oh, he built a laser, now it's okay, he can make an element now.
Yeah, it just, again, I'm telling you, parts 2 and 3, all wrapped into one, when really it seems like they could have expanded more on these to be more satisfying and made just the 2 movies, but makes me wonder if they got something big planned for part 3 that they just had to get to.
They have nothing planned for part 3. They don't know what they're doing for part 3. Because between now and part 3 is Avengers, which we're going to talk about. But before we get to that, the end of the movie, Whiplash, because he's so good with whips, builds robots, and the battle droid army attacks whatever city this is, somewhere in California.
It was actually New York.
Was that New York?
Yeah. The Stark Expo took place in Brooklyn.
Oh, well, Stark lives in California.
I understand that.
Okay. Well, I guess he can get across the country real fast, that suit.
Yeah.
So the hammer drones are at which...
I don't know why their hammer drones? They didn't have hammer heads.
Because it's Justin Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Hammer Time. How could they not use a Hammer Time joke?
Do you see how that didn't even register in my head because it just was so...
So the hammer drones attack and Iron Man and War Machine give us the best all CGI sequence that we're going to see this summer with the possible exception of Toy Story 3. And I'm just wondering where my gamepad is during this as all these faceless robots shoot each other. But it was exciting, I gotta say. I'm a guy, I like big explosions. But then Whiplash shows up in a big armor suit and I'm like, didn't we see this in Iron Man 1?
Yes, we did. Except it was Jeff Daniels in the suit, who was, again, a badass.
But Whiplash had the whips. He doesn't need the suit.
No, he doesn't.
And he kind of, to steal a phrase from Sam Jackson, he goes out like a punk.
Yeah, I really expected that battle to last a lot longer, but I believe it was about 90 seconds from beginning to end. It was just, I can't imagine, knowing what I know about Mickey Rourke, that he would want to go down in such a puff of smoke rather than a blaze of glory.
It would have been so much better if Stark, again, needed something Whiplash had, needed that element to save his own life. Whiplash had the upper hand. At no point in this movie is anything in doubt because Downey Jr. commands the screen and Tony Stark commands everything else. He commands the intelligence, the money, the technology. Nobody even approaches him. So where is the danger? Where's the suspense? I mean, you realize it's a superhero movie. There's no chance that the bad guy's going to win at the end, but I'd still like a little bit more drama and suspense in there versus I have seen video games with more depth.
Again, I say that there would have been a hell of a lot more suspense had Whiplash escaped after the car race and been in constant threat where he was building something evil and we got to see him do more than
building that new mineral.
Tap, 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 tap.
Uh-huh.
And I just, at the end, when he was in the suit, not near as threatening at all compared to when he was in the whip bondage thing. I mean, I have Whiplash on my desktop on my Mac right now, and you go by and you go, oh, that's kind of hot in a prison rape kind of way. Because that's what it was. He's scary. But not so much when he's in another big Iron Man suit. Just, eh.
No. Yeah. He was the best scene in the whole movie is the fight in Monaco.
Yeah.
Finally, let's talk Avengers a little bit. Because so much of this movie hints at Avengers. There's Captain America's shield. And there's so many lines at the end where, again, I feel like they're talking to the audience. Because they're telling Robert Downey Jr., we're not sure if we want you in Avengers. And Robert Downey Jr. responds, you can't afford me. Why do I feel like actually instead of Nick Fury, they should have had a Paramount movie executive there?
Yeah, just some guy in like a little hat and a little cigar.
Yeah, like you're mogul. You're stereotypical mogul. And on the other side of the table, instead of Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. and his plethora of agents.
Yes, his army of agents.
And they're like, we don't want you in Avengers, but we want you to consult. You can't afford me. You know, they better not make an Avengers film without Robert Downey Jr.
But I think he's going to be a consultant. He's going to be back there with the little project managers.
He'll have a cameo. He'll be like Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross. But
that was a really out of left field reference. And kind of like Samuel L. Jackson in the first Iron Man.
No, it won't be that cool. So let's talk about the post-credits scene. Also, yes. Speaking of Avengers, everybody knows to stay after the credits for Iron Man. We learned that last time. I was disappointed in the scene because somebody gave me some crud on the forum saying, Arnie, you posted about this. It's a spoiler for Iron Man 2. It has nothing to do with Iron Man 2. It's a teaser trailer for Thor, next summer's Marvel movie.
Yeah,
but
it's
it
not...
didn't have the crossover appeal. I loved that at the end of Iron Man, you got Nick Fury, so you crossed over Avengers with Iron Man. And I loved that at the end of Hulk, you got Robert Downey Jr. I just can't get enough Robert Downey Jr. And so it crossed over Iron Man and Hulk. At the end of this, I wanted to see, honestly, something bigger. I wanted to see...
something to get you excited for the next in the series rather than...
just a trailer.
Yeah. Like, the end of the Hulk, yeah, it really kind of made you think it's all interwoven, and this was just kind of like...
yeah.
Sorry, that's my impression. I just wasn't excited. I was really hoping for something big, and then it was Thor's hammer. No, don't get me wrong. I do love Thor.
I think the movie is going to be very good. I have hopes with it for Kenneth Branagh directing, but I just wish there had been more of a crossover. And since the next time we're really going to see Robert Downey Jr. is more than likely in Avengers, although he did visit the set of Thor, so maybe there's a little quick
cameo.
Don't
you hate the internet sometimes?
Sometimes. But I would have liked to just see something more than Thor's hammer. I would have liked to have seen some way Iron Man involved with that, or some follow-up to the scene in Incredible Hulk. Something bigger. Something better than what we got. What we got was basically a trailer, and I was disappointed. But, Marjorie, do you recommend Iron Man 2?
Absolutely, because even if Whiplash didn't carry through to be the badass that you're seeing in the trailer. Fantastic villain. I really wish he wasn't dead so he could come back and be like a constant nemesis.
We never saw the body. Well, things blew up around him, but he was in a big metal suit.
True. I liked him. I thought he was great. Robert Downey Jr. was good in it. I mean, he had his still little bit of wit every once in a while, which was good. But Don Cheadle was a good improvement. Love Sam Rockwell. Hate Pepper Potts. Love her name. But I will go see the third one. I thought this was a good movie. The plot holes and some of the slower action, not so good. And I read someplace that someone's, one of the reviews said that Jon Favreau is still earning his chops as far as making good action scenes. I thought he was spot on the car race. End one was really not, I don't know, it was a whole bunch of flying around and they all landed in the set of the biodome and duked it out.
Yeah, where were they? That was kind of like when they go into that big purple room in The Phantom Menace. I'm just going with it because it's in the movie, but I have no clue where they are.
Yeah, it was kind of just like they landed on the set of biodome and duked it out.
You think my Glengarry Glenn Ross reference obscure?
You didn't think of the biodome movie?
I did, sadly.
Okay, so there.
And I recommend this movie highly. I've already seen it twice in theaters. I'm kind of itching to go back a third time. This isn't as good as the first movie, though. The first movie was honestly cinematic perfection. It is the most fun, entertaining movie that balances action and comedy right straight down the line. I hate to say this, but this may be Jon Favreau's worst directorial effort since Maid, which was pretty unwatchable. But Jon Favreau's had a very, very good run as a director. This was not a very strong effort. I think it was a mixture of an overwhelmed director because this...
He had a lot to live up to, let's be honest.
Yeah, he's only done a couple of movies before this, and there was so much in the story, and he only had 2 years to do it. He spent 3 years making the first one. It was an overwhelmed writer making his second feature when he tried to jam way too much in, and it just sucked some of the fun out of this movie, and it wasn't as perfect as Iron Man 1, and it certainly not as good as Tropic Thunder either, which is the writer's other thing. So I recommend this movie, but you gotta go in with some tempered expectations, because if you're expecting something as good as the first, you're not gonna get. But it's still heads and shoulders above most other comic book movies. I mean, especially for Marvel. I mean, I can name 10 movies right now that it's better than. Fantastic Four, Fantastic Four 2, Ghost Rider, Daredevil, Elektra, Howard the Duck, Punisher, 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 and...
David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury TV movie of the week.
I'll take it. So there we go. 10 Marvel movies that Iron Man 2 is better than. Thank you for listening to Now Playing. Please join us. We are beginning our Karate Kid retrospective series tomorrow. So you can join us as we wax philosophical on the Karate Kid. And we'll talk to you then.
Now Playing is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I just want to start off by saying I wish I had a cool name like Pepper Potts, because that is awesome. It is the most awesome name. It's better than Mary Jane. I like Pepper Potts, and I don't like Gwyneth Paltrow. I didn't like the character very much, but I just like the name. I just want to say that.